And welcome in to a brand new venture from Golf News Net. It is Golf News Net Live. I am your humble, somewhat lucid host, TJ Reeves, and it is a pleasure to be joined by the founder, the purveyor, the lead writer on Golf News Net, Mr. Ryan Ballingy. Good to be with you in the aftermath of round one of the Players. This is going to be a blast, what we're doing in the aftermath on Golf News Net Live at all the big golf events. Good to be with you.
Likewise, TJ. I'm really excited to start doing this. This is kind of the dream for Golf News Net Radio when we started this in 2014, to someday be able to deliver live radio content after the biggest events in golf, and to bring that conversation to people as it happens. So I'm very excited about this.
Okay, so as excited as we are, we're not nearly as excited with Jason Day as Jason Day was and is after round number one at the 2016 Players, a record-tying 63, nine-birdie effort. You go back to his disastrous Saturday round a year ago where he shot 81. He was 18 shots better today and takes the opening round by storm. So, Ryan, to you, this was like a lightning bolt today. Give me some thoughts.
Well, I think it's remarkable that Jason Day comes out and does something like this, because he is prone to that kind of blow-up round every now and then. You know, he has that 79 at Heritage that comes out of nowhere, and you think, all right, what's wrong with this guy? And then he has a good showing in New Orleans. And when he got done with New Orleans, he said, look, I've got to rest up. I've got to focus on the Players. I've got to be tuned into that tournament. That's one I want to win. And by gosh, he comes out and shoots 63, and that seems awfully focused to me. So he staked himself a two-stroke lead, and it seems like he's in great position moving forward for the rest of the week, because of the guys that have shot 63 here to start the Players Championship. There have been three. Two of them have gone on to win, Martin Kaymer and Greg Norman. So I'm not going to slant Roberto Castro, the other guy who did this, but he's not quite on that level, and Jason Day is, and that means that probably good things are heading Jason Day's way.
Yeah, more than likely there would be. And look, the guy's the number one player in the world. The guy won a major last year at the end with the PGA Championship, as well as some other big events last year and earlier this year. So it is not unexpected that he could put a round like this together, but I guess the overall thought is the golfers, especially in the morning, just had their way with the old lady with the TPC Sawgrass today. What I mean, the scoring all over the place, including Jason Day's 63. Again, give me an overall thought on how these guys played this well in the opening round, especially in the morning on that course.
Yeah, I think Zach Johnson encapsulated it pretty well after his round. He shot 67 in the afternoon. He said kind of the big difference is wind. There was some in the afternoon, and that's what made scoring a little bit more difficult. But by and large, the course looked soft, played soft, and you give these guys a soft golf course that is 7,200 yards. I don't care if it's Pete Dye's masterpiece or not, but a 7,200-yard golf course that's firm enough that you can hit the ball far and soft enough that you can basically do what you want on the greens. These guys are going to tear it up every time, so we'll just have to see what we get tomorrow. And if we get more wind sustained through the day, then we're going to obviously see different kinds of scoring. And if we get some firmer putting surfaces, we're going to get some different scoring. And I think that's going to harden up over the course of the week, or at least that at this point, that's what the PGA Tour has to hope is going to happen.
Yeah, that's their idea. Now, the weather does call for dry conditions, hot, not looking at a lot of a rain chance, so the course should firm up much more. But you're right, the wind was not much of a factor in the morning, and you look at all of the guys that are tied in the top 12, let's say, tied for seventh, filters all the way down to the top 12. I believe all but one of them were done by lunchtime today. All the ones that are at 7-under and 6-under in that group, they had their feet up this afternoon watching everybody play, and they played in a much less of a windy golf course. So I think that point is well taken. So another name that was fascinating right away, early on this morning, was Ernie Els. Very famously, infamously at Augusta in the opening round with a 6-putt, a 9 on the opening hole. Obviously, 4-time major champion, World Golf Hall of Famer, had an awful hole that day, was a real stand-up guy after the round after he shot poorly that day and answered all the questions. He comes back today, Ryan Ballingy, in the opening round. 6 putts on the first 6 holes, and he made 4 birdies on the first 6 holes. Again, to you, where did this come from Ernie Els on a Thursday morning?
You know, it's not that crazy. If you exclude what happens on the first hole at Augusta National, he probably makes the cut. It's not that bad at the Masters.
Right.
And then he goes over to the Heritage. He switches putters midway through. He goes to a Seymour putter. So he's got a new flat stick in the bag. And in the two rounds that he played on the weekend at Heritage, he had more strokes gained putting than anybody else in the field. He had like 6.5 strokes gained putting. So he has found something with the Seymour putter that he feels really good about. That's obviously carried over to a 6-under effort today. We'll see if that sustains itself. That has kind of been a thing for Ernie Els. He can have a good round here and there, but he can't put four good rounds together. So he's only three back. He's in a decent position. Obviously had the good draw. We'll see if that remains the case tomorrow or not. But he's in position to at least give himself a run at this, which is not something he's really done much of in the past, play well at Sawgrass. So it's interesting to see him do it now, considering the form and what he's been doing putting-wise.
Voice of Ryan Ballingy, TJ Reeves with you. You're tuned in to Golf News Net live in the aftermath of round number one of the Players' Championship being led by Jason Day's 9-under par score. We'll go over some of the more prominent scores as we go along here on this recap of round one. And we'll also briefly look ahead a little bit to round two. Back to Ernie Els, and Ryan, you know this, but for the audience here that's joining us on this, I get the opportunity on occasion to work for PGA Tour Radio and also PGAtour.com. And I had the privilege of being with the coverage last weekend at the Wells Fargo Championship in Charlotte, just north of Sawgrass, for the opening two rounds for PGAtour.com, calling shots. And I was with Ernie Els for a couple of holes on Friday, where he made a nice birdie on the eighth and made a two-putt par on nine. The game looked solid for the holes that I was with him. The stroke looked pretty good. And obviously, he has still got some of the shot-making ability. I guess the real question is whether or not the putter can hold up. But again, that was one of the most fascinating stories, along with Jason Day's great round, was Ernie Els putting together a 66. And I like what you said. Can he sustain it? What else stood out of the guys? I mean, there's a group of Cameron Tringale, Shane Lowry, Justin Rose, Bill Haas, Brendan Steele that all got in at 7-under, a quintet of five guys there. Give me something that stands out of those guys that are chasing Jason Day.
I think Shane Lowry's record tying or record setting, even 29 on the back nine, to get in his round today. So he kind of came out a little bit flat and then finished it off in style. So to only be two back, that's good position for him. Justin Rose, who got himself in position to win at Wells Fargo from tee to green last weekend, but could not buy a putt to save his life. Otherwise, he would have won that golf tournament. So he's back into position, obviously making putts today. So that's got to feel good for him. He knows he's got the game from tee to green to win pretty often, but he just does not have the flat stroke working for him usually. So if that sustains itself, he's a guy to look out for this week. But at this point, the guy with the most complete game in golf, tee to green and including the greens at this point, is Jason Day. And if he continues to play a consistent style of golf through the next three rounds, he really, TJ, only has to shoot 69 the next 3 days. I can guarantee you he's going to win the tournament if he shoots that. I mean, at 21 under par, you're pretty much going to win this tournament every year other than 1994. So I think that's probably what Jason Day's thinking about at this point. Just pace yourself. Just try to hang in there. You can put up a number tomorrow, and that's great. But if you just put up a number in the 60s for the next 3 days, you've got this thing won.
Well, and again, an international blend across this leaderboard, not only with Day, the Australian, leading. We mentioned Ernie Els, we mentioned Shane Lowry, but you've got Francesco Molinari, who shot 66 on the opening day. Justin Rose, again, I was around him some on the Thursday and the Friday rounds at Wells Fargo last week. He's going with that claw grip. He had been toying around with going away from it, I guess, in practice leading up to the Players' Championship, the claw putting grip. Looked like for a lot of this round today, the holes that I saw, he was using it again and shot 65. Rose has former major championship pedigree as well. What do you make of him at 7-under 65 through round one in the morning?
I really like his chances. I mean, from ball striking perspective, this golf course should set up perfectly for him. It never seems that out of place for him to be anywhere on a leaderboard because of what he can do from tee to green. But like so many players on the PGA Tour that are great ball strikers, there aren't that many that are great putters and great ball strikers. So for him, the emphasis here is continuing to hit the small greens. If he can hit the small targets, he can set himself up with relatively easy two putts that sometimes will turn into one putts and turn into birdies. And if he can continue to do that, then I like him probably among all the guys that are at 7-under par right now to to give Day the most run for his money over the next 3 days.
One thing I like about Rose, and I want your thought, Ryan, is the temperament. He is not a guy that is volcanic, for lack of a better adjective, when things start to go wrong. I like his temperament even when there's a bad hole to be able to hang in. It's one of the reasons why he has throughout his career had a lot of success in the bigger events, staying in contention, giving himself a chance to win, and eventually did finish off a U.S. Open win back a couple of years ago. What about the temperament part of Justin Rose's game as a veteran and how it will serve him as this unfolds?
I think it certainly helps a lot. The interesting thing about him is he knows he's not a good putter. He knows he's a great ball striker. So he knows when the flat stick works, all right, you play a little bit more aggressively because you can make putts. You can put yourself in a position to make those birdies. When you're not, you're still hitting greens because you're that good of a player from tee to green. You just have to approach it a little bit differently, play to the right spots instead of right to the target. And he does that accordingly. But the courses that he has won on, those are ball strikers' paradise. As you think about when he won the AT&T National, that's obviously a ball strikers' paradise. You have to do it very well at Marion to win a U.S. Open. That's got to be an incredible challenge. So the places that he has been successful in the past are places where you've got to do what he does best, which is be great from tee to green. And when he catches fire with the flat stick, then he can torch pretty much any golf course he wishes. So that's always the big question mark for him. And I'm sure as he goes out tomorrow afternoon, he'll wonder probably if he's going to have it again. And if he does, then he'll play accordingly. And if not, he'll try to shoot for a 70 or a 69 that keeps him within striking distance of whatever Jason Day does or whatever his peers at 7-under plan to do tomorrow afternoon.
And we would add Muirfield and the Memorial as another tournament with Jason, yeah, that Justin Rose has conquered in the past. And there are also some recent winners that are up on the leaderboard after round one of the players. That includes the likes of James Hahn, the winner this past weekend at the Wells Fargo, who shoots 67 in the opening round. Last year's Open champion, the champion golfer of the year, Zach Johnson, shoots 67 in the afternoon in the opening round. In fact, it was Zach Johnson and Alex Chayka who had the two best afternoon rounds, each coming in at 5-under 67. It's amazing. You shoot 5-under 67 at the Players in the opening round, and you look down at your day, you're not in the top 10 on that for right now. So just a little perspective. There's a slew of guys that are tied at 5-under that are not in the top 10. You shoot 4-under, you're not in the top 20, Ryan. So it tells you how good scoring was.
Yeah, this was something we heard during the telecast, was that this was the best scoring round basically in the first round of the history of the Players Championship, certainly in the last 25 years. A lot of rounds of 65 or better. More often than not at the Players Championship, you're lucky to get a half dozen players who shoot 65 over the course of the week. We obviously had that many players do that today, shoot 65 or better. So we've kind of hit that watermark for scoring. The real intrigue is going to be how this course changes over the next 3 days, because obviously the PGA Tour is going to do their darndest to try to keep they don't want scoring to continue at this pace. There's no way they want that for this championship. So they're going to try to make it more difficult. They're going to try to get aided as much as they can by what they have at their disposal to make this course firmer and faster. They're going to use some hole positions. They're going to make things a little bit more difficult, a little bit more tricky for these guys, because clearly it wasn't all that tricky today for most of the field. And like you said, if you're at 67 or worse, you're not even thinking about the top 10 at this point.
That is the voice of Ryan Ballingy, who again owns, operates, and writes up all the time on Golf News Net. I'm TJ Reeves. You can, by the way, tweet at this show at Golf News Net. You can also use the hashtag GNN Live. It's Golf News Net Live in the aftermath of the opening round of the Players Championship. We will be here Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday night once a champion is crowned in this event. We look forward to that. Ryan, stand by. We've got more on the way. We have not yet talked about Jordan Spieth making his first appearance in over a month since the Masters meltdown on the back nine on Sunday. Spieth was in action. There were some guys in the late afternoon that were making some noise until they got to those final finishing holes, namely Rory McIlroy, Ricky Fowler, and what in the world happened to Adam Scott. We'll talk about all of that coming up. Stay with us on Golf News Net Live. We shall return.
Are you getting overwhelmed with tracking social media? All the mentions, likes, hearts, emojis, and who likes hamburgers and tacos? Is your CMO and digital director on your back about audience insights and what's trending? If so, you need to take the guessing game out of social media and email Quentin now. Email Quentin at q@zoomph.com. That's the letter Q at zoomph.com. Quentin is familiar with your problems. He spent years playing collegiate sports and professional football. He knows what drives fan experience on and off the field, so you don't need a $1 billion software company to get your data and give you reports you can't even make sense from. Zoomph works with hundreds of universities and professional sports teams to drive up engagement and sponsorship revenue. So take the guessing game out of social engagement and see why the digital teams at Duke, Virginia Tech, Clemson, Boston College, and the ACC all leverage Zoomph for your complete social media analytics and brilliant web and in-venue visualizations. Email Quentin at q@zoomph.com. That's the letter Q at zoomph.com.
We are back in the aftermath of round one of the Players' Championship, the unofficial fifth major of the world of golf, at least in United States golf lexicon. I'm TJ Reeves here on Thursday evening after Jason Day scorched things Thursday morning with a 9-under 63 and then a slew of players, either one back or actually two back at 7-under, another large group, three back at 6-under. So we're back in talking about all of that. And I've got Ryan Ballingy here from Golf News Net. Love his insight as we come back in. You got to be proud of me that we went through the whole first segment and I didn't bring up anything about Jordan Spieth. Spieth is obviously one of the biggest storylines, and we went a good 15 minutes, didn't even talk about him. That's partially because he didn't have a great round. All right, so give me some thoughts here. It was just kind of an okay day with a bad finishing hole for Spieth as he double bogeyed the ninth. But what about Spieth, Ryan, as we bring you back in?
The one thing that really has interested me about Jordan Spieth, and for most of this year, other than the eight-shot laugher that he had when he won the Hyundai Tournament of Champions to start 2016, at least on the PGA Tour, he kind of has one hole every round where you just kind of wonder what in the world he's doing, where he has a bogey, double bogey, triple bogey, quad, where you just kind of wonder what in the world he's thinking. And it seems like he either loses focus or gets frustrated or just kind of has that mental moment where he just doesn't do what he typically does, where he's so mentally strong and really locks into every shot. And that happened on this final hole today, left one in a bunker or barely got it out of a bunker, then hit his next one, and the ball didn't release as he thawed off of the slope at the ninth hole, the par five ninth, and he just kind of looked incredulous at Michael Greller, his caddy, as though the ball is supposed to do exactly what he wants on command. And I understand a lot of tour players feel that way about every single shot, but to see the visible frustration on his face as he finished with a double bogey to finish at even par 72, it was pretty evident, and he seemed pretty salty after the fact. He was asked, well, what in the world happened on the ninth hole? He said, well, I took seven strokes to get the ball in the hole. And that's not typically the kind of answer you get from Jordan Spieth when he either goes through a difficult situation or he's just asked a question about kind of process, what in the world happened on the golf course. So I'm very surprised to see that. I think he's probably a little bit frustrated that he's nine shots back of Jason Day going into day two. At this point, you're sitting outside the cut line with how good the morning scoring was, and he basically missed a huge opportunity to get himself into this championship. Now he's got a claw from behind on the same side of draw as Day, so that's going to be difficult to do. And he's playing alongside Day for that matter. So he gets to watch that up close and personal. A guy absolutely torched the golf course while you're struggling to get your ball in the hole. So
I was going to say, when you were talking, I was saying this, that part of your mentality, I was thinking this, part of your mentality has to be, what's wrong with me? When the other guy's making nine birdies and you're scuffling just to be at even par at the very end, it's hard. It's just human nature, isn't it, to say, what's wrong with me here? Why am I not hitting the same shots this guy's hitting?
Yeah, the remarkable thing between all the guys who are kind of the big three, not so much the big four, but if you think about it, Jordan Spieth is in Rory McIlroy's head, because Rory McIlroy can't believe that Jordan Spieth doesn't hit the ball as far as him or really kind of the same talent level from tee to green, but he scores better than him. Jason Day is in Jordan Spieth's head because Jordan Spieth wishes he could hit the ball as far as Jason Day could. And when Jason Day putts at his best, it's as good as Jordan Spieth's best with his putting. And then Jason Day and Rory McIlroy kind of play off of each other a little bit, but I think Rory McIlroy sees himself as the superior talent between all three of these guys. So
Jason Day is in his head. So you get that up close and personal for 18 holes to see a guy tie the course record at a very important event like the Players' Championship. If you're Jordan Spieth, that only puts Jason Day more in your head, and you get another 18 holes with him tomorrow. So I'm sure he's not necessarily looking forward to that.
Again, the voice of Ryan Ballingy, TJ Reeves with you. If you're just hanging out and catching this show, it is Golf News Net Live. We are coming your way in the aftermath of the opening round of the Players' Championship. We'll be here Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday night. In the recap mode, you can give us your thoughts on what's going on. You can tweet at this show two different ways. Tweet at Golf News Net on Twitter, and also use the hashtag GNN Live for Golf News Net. Very profound, very original, GNN Live. And you can also check it out on Facebook as well with all the interaction. We gotta get to Ricky Fowler, his game and his attire today too, because I know that was getting a lot of attraction on the site, Ryan, on Golf News Net and on Facebook. You were posing about Ricky Fowler's shoes. One more thing here on the expectation of Spieth. He's 22 years of age. I mean, he has got a phenomenal career in front of him. And I don't think every round from here on out should be a referendum on how great a player he has been or will be. He's going to have a long, long career. Can we pump the brakes a little, Ryan?
And I agree with that. And I think that that's the reality of the situation. Jordan Spieth has been the Tiger Woods replacement. You know, with Tiger Woods, is every single shot was shown on TV, whether he was in contention or not. And that's still going to be the case when he comes back. And now Jordan Spieth gets that treatment because he's the All-American guy. I mean, of the guys who are doing the top four players in the world, he's the American. He's the American with major championships. And so he gets that kind of microscopic treatment, for better or for worse. And I think for him, it's probably for worse, because at a certain point, he's going to bristle about it. He's going to be unhappy with it. That was the remarkable thing about Tiger Woods, was that he knew all of that scrutiny was on him, that he knew every shot was showed, that he knew every time he dropped a cuss word under his breath, it was going to catch a mic. And he still dominated golf. And he didn't really bat an eye, at least publicly, about it. I mean, he probably bristled about it at times, but he knew what the deal was. And I think Spieth knows the deal. He's still just trying to get used to it. And that's something we heard a couple of times leading into the major season from different reports, different stories that you've probably read, is that he's struggling with this notion of being kind of the face of the sport, at least in this country. And how you manage your time, how you manage your expectations, how you manage fans' expectations. And at this point, it's kind of a losing battle because of what happened at Augusta National. People are going to have this expectation that either you kind of all of a sudden surge back to where you were triumphantly and come out today, shoot 65 or Jason Day 63 for that matter, and all is right with the world. Or if you do anything worse than basically set the pace, you're downtrodden, everything's terrible. And Spieth alluded to this earlier in the week when he has pre-tournament news conferences, that if I hit a bad shot on a par three, if I go in the water, if I have a poor round, it's not because I'm thinking about putting two in Rae's Creek. It's just because I'm playing golf. And I think that's, as you mentioned, that's something we've got to get over, the fact that we're not watching the reincarnation of Tiger Woods here. We're watching guys who have tremendous talent, but they also have tremendous flaws, and not the same kind of grinder's mentality that Woods had that made him so brilliant, even when he didn't play that well. These guys are going to have bad rounds. And they're going to have plenty of them. So we've just kind of got to accept that as part of the package.
Understood. We've only got a few moments left on this program. Are you ready to do some fun stuff, rapid fire, with agree or don't agree? You ready?
Let's do it.
It's time for agree or don't agree.
All right, here we go. So the first thing, a perfect segue from Jordan Spieth. Agree or don't agree, he bounces back with a good number and puts himself in the thick of things on Friday. Do you agree that Spieth bounces back Friday? Quick.
I'm going to agree, and I say that because he has a tendency when he falls out of it to kind of play a DGAF round. And it usually turns out to be a 68 or 67. So I have a feeling he's going to do that tomorrow.
And we'll let the audience figure out DGAF if they don't know that or understand that. Ernie Els, agree or don't agree that he does not sustain it, that he falls off the pace tomorrow, Ryan Ballingy? Agree or don't agree on Ernie?
I'm going to agree. I think he's going to shoot something like 73 or 74 tomorrow, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. That can keep him still in the tournament, depending on what Jason Day does, but I just find it hard for him to sustain another good putting round like he had today.
Okay. Again, the voice of Ryan Ballingy, Golf News Net, TJ Reeves with you. It's GNN Live. We're doing a little more agree. Let's do it again officially.
Agree or don't agree.
Yes, we are playing agree or don't agree. So Ricky Fowler's shoes, those Puma Basketball high tops, for lack of a better description, they didn't match on Thursday with the fuchsia and the neon gold. Agree or don't agree that Ricky Fowler's shoes will match in round number two in color? Do you agree that they will match, or do you disagree in round two on the fashion statement?
I'm going to agree because of the way he finished the round. He may have some kind of color blindness issue going on. So he may want to consider having matching shoes for round two and just seeing how that all plays out. But I mean, to have the kind of fishing that he did, that was pretty disappointing for him. Obviously, the defending champions here tend to not do very well in their defense. The last guy to have a top 10 in a player's defense is Adam Scott, and that was 11 years ago. So this is keeping up a trend, but I think Ricky Fowler is not afraid to make a fashion statement. So he might keep it going with the uneven shoes tomorrow.
It may be, and how amazing is it now to look back on what he did 2015, including in the final round, when Fowler doesn't make the birdie putt on 17 and puts the ball in the water on 18. Any of those moments a year ago, he doesn't win the Players' Championship because he had to go all the way into the playoff with that. And then what about Adam Scott on that final hole? Agree or don't agree with ball in the water off the tee, a ball that went down the cart path almost out of the parking lot of Sawgrass for him to play his next shot, which also ended up going in the water? Agree or don't agree, that's going to have a carryover effect on Adam Scott, and he could have some problems because he's got to come back tomorrow morning. He could have some bad problems after that quad to finish, an uneasy finish for Scott. Will that translate into a bad round Friday for him?
I don't know if it's necessarily a bad round, but it's 10 behind Jason Day, so at this point you've got to look at the tournament differently. You're not thinking about winning from 10 behind. You're thinking about just trying to claw away, and if you're trying to do that on this golf course, you play conservatively. Sometimes that bites you in the butt, so that's very well possible for Adam Scott tomorrow.
Yeah, he puts a couple different balls in the water. And one more on agree or don't agree. Do you believe, as we're sitting here on a Thursday night, that the tour, the organizers of the Players, that they are embarrassed by all the low scores here? And some of it's out of your control because these guys are really talented. But do you think they're embarrassed on a Thursday night that the best players in the game came in and really tore this place apart, especially Thursday morning?
I think they're realizing a bad trend. If you think about three of the last 4 years, someone has shot 63 to start this tournament. Roberto Castro in 2013, Martin Keimer in 2014, nobody in 2015, and Jason Day in 2016. So for whatever reason, what they've done to create this golf course so that it can be played in May for this championship as opposed to March like it used to be, it's creating at least one low score to kick off the tournament. But then again, you think about the way that the tournament has played out each of the last 4 years or so, you kind of get that good start, and then someone comes back to the field and you kind of get that drama at the end. So this tournament has a way of leveling itself off. I'm sure there's some concern with the number of players who were so far under par today. Getting that 67 or better into the house on day one is certainly a concern, but they have a confidence level that Sawgrass has a tendency to find a way to get guys to get back bunched together. And at the end of it all, if they get a dramatic finish, I don't think that they necessarily care what the score under par is.
I would agree with that, and it will be fascinating on Friday because the leaders and a lot of those guys that shot low that were 7-under or 6-under, they're playing in the afternoon, and let's see if those windy conditions bring it back. Let's see if some of the guys that were playing in the afternoon that did pretty well, 4-under, 3-under, if they go low on Friday morning, it is part of the intrigue. We want to remind you to check out golfnewsnet.com for everything in and around the Players, including fantasy advice, equipment, all of that, including Ricky Fowler's different colored shoes. You can check that out at golfnewsnet.com. And Ryan, we remind the audience that we will be here Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday night with Golf News Net Live. You can use the hashtag GNN Live to communicate with us as well. Tweet at Golf News Net if you've got comments, if you've got questions, all kinds of stuff. Did you have fun on episode number one, and are you ready for round number two?
I did. Did you have fun?
Absolutely, I had as much fun as Ricky Fowler's shoes. I keep coming back to that. I didn't have as much misery as Adam Scott's 18th hole. I didn't have as much fun as Jason Day's 63, but it was somewhere in the middle of all of that. So we did well with all of this. And Ryan, thank you, and we will have fun watching round two tomorrow and talking about it tomorrow night.
Yeah, I can't wait. It'll be better than most.
Thank you. A nice Gary Coke line to finish it up. I'm TJ Reeves. Thank you for being with us. We will talk to you in the aftermath of round two coming on Friday evening at the Players Championship for Golf News Net Live.